This episode of Off Course is brought to you by Bag Boy. For 75 years, Bag Boy has been at the forefront of pulp cart production, challenging what is possible and pursuing various ways of bolstering the walking experience. From the two-wheel wonders of the 60s to the three- and four-wheel carts of today, Bag Boy continues to provide an optimal experience for the walking golfer. Visit www.bagboy.com for more info.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and with me this week is Mr. Josh Babbitt, who is determined to get back on the show because he's got big stories for me, leading with the fact that he just celebrated his, 65th birthday the other day? Happy birthday, man. Welcome back.
Something like that. I had a tough shoes to fill after following Jeremy's show last week. That was really good.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. You can follow Josh on Twitter if you don't already, at JB_THP Golf. I believe you participate in a few posts from at THP Golf as well.
Some of them.
How's the current social landscape for a golf media company right now? What's it like?
It's different. It's evolving. It always is. I mean, it's kind of crazy to think just a decade ago how different it was with Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and TikTok and all the others. It's Twitter specifically, since that's the one you use the most, is just so angry.
Yeah.
It's about having a hot take and getting people to engage. And that's just not really my thing, but it's a tool, and it's a tool that can deliver news well to the masses. The problem is a lot of the news is not real.
So
I'm speaking golf specifically.
I remember back in the days of TweetDeck and super early on Twitter, it was all 140 characters. You never really saw too many pictures, nothing like that. Now it seems like I have to scroll pretty hard through my timeline to get away from either a GIF or a picture or something like that. It's almost off-putting. It's different than it was back then.
It is. It's very much now used as a source for getting people to click through.
Mm-hmm.
The clickbait titles are alive and well. And listen, I get it. I completely get it. Hosting a website or a newspaper or whatever it is isn't free. It costs money. And you have to have people click those things. We're not set up that way. It's not necessarily a thing for us, but I know for a lot of them it is. But in regards to that, obviously eyeballs matter. With that said, I struggle with that platform specifically only because of the way golf Twitter, as I like to refer to it, is done. And it's one hot take after the other, with most of it being completely untrue.
It's pretty reactionary. One thing that is getting really tiresome at this point, and it seems to be a common theme, because once something starts to get talked about, how it goes, it just never stops. Someone will post something interesting, whether it's a stat or a quote or a picture, and then suddenly the entire timeline is filled with the same quote, the same stat. It's what happened to originality is my question.
Social media killed originality, because it's easier just to highlight, right click, copy, and then paste, and then go in there and change a word or two and call it a day. It's more known now because people follow similar things, but it's been going on forever. To give you a story, about 8 years ago, we got an email from somebody saying, I think you stole this website's work. And I was kind of taken aback, because every story we write on there is completely done in-house. And I look, and they literally copy and pasted our entire article on this. It was about a Nike driver, posted it, including our pictures that had our watermark that they tried to remove, and then called it their own. And I reach out to them, and they're like, oh, it was sent in by a reader. It was, we put it as a guest post and a bunch of other nonsense. And that you had to go out and find. In this case, if you're following six or seven people and they're of the same industry, you see it constantly.
I miss the days where it wasn't credit to. It was just I don't mind the retweeting. That's not so bad. even the quote retweeting where you're kind of bringing up your own thing. But I think at this point, and I'll use a good example from the weekend, and we can definitely talk about it a bit. My driver sucks. I can't tell you how many times I read that.
Yeah, I call that the Darren Revelle special. Nothing against Darren Revelle, who's made a career out of the sports business and done well. But he, for years before the quote tweet and the image and thing like that, would just steal material and then write, not steal, but take material and then write credit to in the small print at the very bottom, yeah. As if that his million followers cared about that. Instead of coming up with the original stuff, now it's changed a little bit. Now people don't even do that. Just retweet it or quote it if you want to share it, instead of just taking it and using it elsewhere, has always been my philosophy. Now, some of that is not necessarily the fault of the user, though. For instance, it is getting much harder to film something if you're watching it on TV or live at a PGA Tour event or something like that and share it without them coming down on you, and for using their stuff. Now, I'm sure an everyday user can, but PGA Tour, Golf Channel, and these others spend a lot of money to create that content. And if you're going to share it, you definitely have to click and hold and then say share video, so it has the little logo on the bottom of where it came from. I hate that too, for what it's worth. I wish people would just retweet it instead of having to share the video as it's their own, but I get why they don't do it. They want it to be come off as original, even though it's not.
Yeah, it's. I took a picture last week, which I think it's okay to take little snippets, little snapshots of event coverage. My picture was of Rye's pants. Did you happen to see those?
I did.
A little mix between joggers and like parachute pants, and
it looked like a diaper.
It was terrifying. And I really enjoy the guy's swing. Looks like a good player. I'm not familiar with his work outside of the fact that I know he golfs well enough to be in the Open. But man, I don't want to go down the fashion trend discussion with you today because I know it's not going to end well. But man, what were those?
They were unique, to say the least. And listen, I'm glad everybody's got their style. I will tell you that I thought Tommy Fleetwood's hat was the worst fashion abomination in the history of all kind, with 17 different patterns on there. So those pants being what they were, I thought the hat was worse, but I agree that I feel like Nike is just playing a joke right now, saying, oh, we could throw anything out there and these guys are going to buy it.
So there are companies who do greatest hits. Do you think Nike's currently running through their greatest hits lineup where they just mash all their ideas together?
I honestly don't know what they're doing. I literally put that hat up on a different social media platform and it was like 95% hated it and 5% thought it was the greatest hat ever. So it's the same thing I say about wearing basketball shoes on the golf course that look ridiculous with patent leather. But
I suppose, to their credit, you can make a lot of money off the 5%, can't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I saw that hat. I didn't think very much of it. I remember making a comment quite a while ago saying that I feel like at one point someone decided they didn't want to work there anymore, but didn't feel like quitting. So they just keep coming up with the most ridiculous things they can. And I know that's a hard thing to say because someone's could very well be working very, very hard on trying to create interesting and unique designs, but it just feels like someone's like, I'm just going to mess with them for a while. And turns out it's actually becoming popular or something like that. I don't know.
If you're Nike Golf, and I'm not picking on them specifically, what do you think is the most popular hat they've ever sold?
Their hat?
Yeah.
Oh, geez. I don't know.
I would guess it's either a black or red hat with a TW on it, or a plain colored hat, fair, like a white hat with the swoosh on it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they have to stray that far. You know, Titleist certainly hasn't with their 45 different colors with the Titleist script. And listen, that's a great hat. And other ones haven't as well. I don't know the reasoning for to have to go down the crazy path unless you're doing limited editions, which I'm for, which you guys discussed a little bit on last week's show.
Yeah. What is Apparel Alpha right now in JB's closet? What's the one thing that you grab before anything else?
If we're talking shirts, I've been gravitating the same thing as last year, really, which is the Puma Cloudspun line and the straight down polo line with an outside shout out to Travis Matthew, which is a little more cottony. So I wear that more as a casual wear or in the fall and spring. But those are the three that I've kind of gravitated more to almost exclusively, despite having a lot of others. And it shifted dynamically from the Peter Millar stuff, which I still think is really good. I find their sizing has changed slightly, and straight down has come out of the gates and hitting like a home run with their materials.
And so, creativity is not to be ignored either. You had some pretty fun articles and shirts with different designs on them. I like seeing that. I don't want like bright and flashy or something ridiculous, but you have some pretty fun and almost hard to tell designs. I think it looks good.
Yeah. And I think Puma's done a really good job at that this last year as well. So yeah, I would say that for pants, it's almost exclusively Travis Matthew. If I'm wearing pants, I just love their latest pants. And for shorts, the Puma jackpot. I haven't tried the Gray Label shorts yet, but James on our forum has said they're fantastic.
Okay. I want to circle back to Bryson a little bit. You and I both have been...
You need to have some sort of music that hits in each episode for the Bryson segment, because yeah, it seems like it's a weekly thing.
Well, and that's the problem. I was just about to say, you and I have both been incredibly fair, I think, to him over the last year or two.
Objective, I would say.
I think my perspective was that he got a bad rap and everyone were having a little bit too much fun making him out to be, you know, the worst person possible. And I tried to give him benefit of the doubt and, you know, say maybe we just misunderstood. He's another one of those guys who his personality is either going to rub you the wrong way or make you scratch your head or become fascinated by what he's trying to accomplish, which in reality, he really is doing things that most people wouldn't even bother. But I think that all came to a hard stop this weekend for me with his comments about Cobra. Do you think they were heat of the moment at the time about as malicious as he could be?
Yes. It's funny because I find most of the arguments against Bryson to be absurd in general, based solely on the fact of the same defense when it's brought up are given to other players. Not that the slow play is acceptable, just the people complaining about slow play or then cheering on Jordan Spieth and saying, oh, he's changing. This one was wrong. You know, it is kind of funny though, because one of the things that I took away from this was laughing at certain people on social media who got so mad about Bryson complimenting his equipment companies,
yeah,
saying that it has no place and it sounded NASCAR-ish and this and that, then jumping on the bandwagon of can't believe he said this, you know, which was kind of funny to me. I thought it was indefensible. It was a heat of the moment thing. It came out. A lot of people didn't like the apology. I thought the apology was fine, and they said, oh, he needs to do it to Cobra. They have no idea if he has or hasn't. I have spoken to the people at Cobra that would have been impacted by these words separately, and it did hit home. I'm one of the few that at first, when I saw Ben's response, thought, ooh, that's a tough one to put out there like that.
Yeah.
But I applaud him for standing up for both himself, the company, and the people who design. There's not a person in golf R&D that doesn't look at somebody like Tom Olsovsky and Mike Yagley and the rest of their engineers and think, my goodness, those are smart guys who are designing great equipment. It doesn't exist. Mike Yagley pedigree is well known. You know, he was Callaway before that. Before that, he was in aerospace engineering and has done great things in innovation. Tom Olsovsky was one of the people in charge of Metalwoods for TaylorMade Golf during their biggest peak in maybe the history of the golf industry. So I find things like that off-putting for Bryson to say that stuff, because it's just not correct. But I appreciated that he came out quickly and addressed it. But there's no defense for that.
So
what's interesting though, is let me ask you a question before you go.
Yeah.
If when Tiger Woods was playing Nike, he came out and said something to the effect of that after Phil Mickelson made the joke about him playing inferior equipment, would it have been taken differently?
I would imagine, based on everything we know about Nike golf, whether it's now or before, everyone would probably agree with him.
I think you're probably right. I think there would have been a defense to it. But I think you're probably right. This one was the idea that they're just going to drop him. I'm not sure I agree with that, but I'm not the flip side of the people who are saying that he's needed for Cobra to be successful. I'm not sure I agree with that either.
Are you surprised that Cobra, a spokesperson from Cobra, came out so quickly with feedback as, I don't want to say damning because that's challenging. Everyone knew Bryson was demanding. Everyone knew Bryson was of another planetary mindset when considering product. I mean, he was the guy who was swishing golf balls around in a bowl full of Epsom salt before we even knew what Epsom salt was, right? So no one should be surprised that he would challenge Cobra the way he was. The question was, are you surprised they came out and openly said, this is the challenges we are facing, and laid it out there effectively for people to let them have their own version of the story?
No. Social media is a small thing. This story got bigger as it hit some pretty national news segments. What's funny is when it was first said, you only heard a quick snippet of it. I thought he was talking about his driver swing. And then he goes on and he doubled down on that, which was not good. No, I'm not surprised that the response came out quickly. I'm surprised that Ben made the response he did as quickly as he did. And that part was interesting. It's tough to say. I mean, their leader at that company is Bob Fillion, and Bob is an incredibly smart guy, also a great guy. But I believe, and he's never said this to me or anything like that, but I believe he's a protect our house person. And I think that's what Ben did. I'm not sure if I were Cobra, I would have had Ben be the messenger, but Ben being the closest one to him on a week-to-week basis makes a whole lot of sense. I don't know. I liked the response.
Do you think it's even fair for companies and just golf in general, all this talk about isolating equipment just the variances that are in equipment and all these concerns we have getting close to or around the limitations that are set forth. Do you think it's even fair that companies are making all these variants of their product? Should the expectation for pro golfers be that they play something close to an off the rack product?
Here's what I would say to that. A couple of things. First, I don't think the variants are as great as people think they are. We're not talking about a CG moving an inch in a direction. We're not talking about that stuff. In his case, it's longer, lower loft, and there's some subtle changes that are beneficial to a player like him that wouldn't fit 99.9% of the golfers. Frankly, based on his comments, it doesn't fit him. I don't have an issue with it as much as other people do, but there's this belief out there that these guys are playing equipment that is nowhere near the retail version that exists. And that's just not true. It's in some cases it's identical. In fact, one of the funniest ones was the low spin world that exists for distance has been talked about for a number of years now, and everybody thought the tour drivers were the lowest of the low spin. And if you look at a brand like Callaway, which has one of the larger uses on tour of metal woods, it was the opposite. They were adding some spin to the driver, to the Sub-Zero model. So I think that there's some of it there. It's kind of like the online world of Offset. I can't look at Offset, where Onset is okay. They're both the ability to have the club face square at impact in whichever way you go, and a player bending that to, or having that to his area that works for him, makes sense. Sergio's been a guy who's had Onset on his irons for years that wouldn't benefit any golfer out there. It's just the way he closes down. Whereas there are guys on tour with a lot of Offset in their clubs because that's the way they square up. So I don't know. I don't really have an issue with that as much as I think some people have the FOMO thing, the fear of missing out on something that might be better than what they have, even though it's not really the case.
All right. So let's ask the real question that we can answer here. And that's, Bryson wants a driver that misses well when he mishits it. So he's effectively an internet golfer or an everyday golfer in his perspective. If a company like Cobra came out with a driver that hit the way you wanted to when you mishit it, would any other company ever sell a driver ever again?
No. And they have, but he needs something. It is crazy to think about when you are putting the speed that he is into the ball and what is happening at impact and what is happening when you miss. When you get down to that kind of loft, you are talking about millimeter missing. Think about this. All the talk the last year has been golfers on tour and amateurs going longer in shafts. The reason that that can happen is because drivers are so much more forgiving than they were just 5 years ago. Now combine that with at that speed and at that loft, and the error possibility is minute. The rad speed actually, and we've tested it here at normal speeds, is very forgiving. His issue, and any golfer at that type of speed, is going to be a fitting issue. I found it interesting because during that round, it looked like a timing thing. I'm no expert, but it looked like a timing thing. Why didn't he blame the shaft?
Is it LAGP?
Yeah.
Okay. A lot more to lose there, I suppose.
Maybe. I don't know. You know, he's been so complimentary of Cobra and Bridgestone over the years, and obviously LAGP, where he owns part of that company. But why didn't that come to be? And instead it went to the face. I guess, you know, that makes sense. The average golfer doesn't think about the grip, the shaft, or anything else. But the face won him a major.
Yeah.
Driver was slightly different, but the face in general, the Cobra face, while the Infinity has changed, the actual dynamics of the forgiveness level is incredible on those clubs.
So what do you think the next year looks like for him then? Because, and I want to pose this in a certain way. If you look at a guy like Rory and consider the amount of distance he generates based on a swing that's not upsetting to look at, and then you compare it to Bryson, who's making these like extreme power moves in order to generate similar ball speeds, maybe a little bit higher. At some point, he's going to look at that and consider how many efficiencies he's losing by not swinging with the same level of fluid motion that a guy like Rory would, or DJ, or anyone. What's the Nina Bar? Like some of these guys who are basically tiny human beings who put unbelievable moves on the golf ball. At what point does Bryson's brain shift from power and strength to just pure efficient energy transfer?
I don't think it does. And to be fair, the data doesn't support that. As he said, hit it as far as you can and go get it. That's the way the tour is won nowadays. Look at the people who win consistently. They're all long hitters.
Now keep in mind, I'm not talking about shortening distance.
I know what you're getting at. Okay. Being more efficient. I would say the same thing. I'll pose the question back to you since you mentioned Rory. At what point in his career does he watch somebody who can actually make a 5 foot putt and say, you know, I'm going to work on that?
Well, Rory's not as crazy as Bryson is. Let's just lead that. Bryson's the only guy who changes his swing. Not? I don't think so.
Or is he covered really differently?
I would say he's covered differently, but Rory's also been pretty public about how golf doesn't impact him emotionally the way I think people want it to. It seems like he's more just enjoying the ride, and whether that's true or whether he's, you know, saving face or whatever, if it is true, I'm pretty cool with it. I think he had a chance early on to do some special things. I think that kind of didn't happen. He got a little bit more excited about working out than working on his game. But I think a good comparison there would be, as much grief as DJ gets, has there been any guy working harder on his accuracy, his short iron game over the last couple years?
Maybe, you know, and I agree with that. But I guess my thing is it swing your swing. And that's been something I've lived by, in my opinion, the greatest golfer of all time. And not
your
because
swing.
He has. Yeah. Swing your swing.
How is your swing?
It's okay. But I believe in what Arnie said, and I believe that Bryson's way of going about it, while certainly unconventional, I still believe one length makes a lot of sense. And mm-hmm. I use the Bryson example as another thing. His equipment is certainly different. You know, there's no way around that. But we hear it every single tournament, anytime he misses a wedge shot. Oh, it's the shaft. It's this. Rory's been missing putts and wedge shots for 2 years now, repeatedly, and not a single time has anybody ever mentioned his equipment. And Tiger Woods, the most dominant golfer in the history of the game, was a constant struggle with driver. Not a single time did anybody ever mention his equipment. And with Bryson, for somehow, that's what you go to, and I don't quite understand that argument.
I think for the wedges, it makes sense because it's something so different that it's like anything else. People are afraid of change and they're afraid of different, right? So when you hear, well, his 60 degree is X length, it's terrifying to some folks.
But here's a follow-up question. How do you know what the lengths are on the wedges of the other guys on tour?
I don't know what Bryson's lengths are. Someone says,
ironically enough, there are a number of players on tour that their wedges are all the same length.
Yeah.
So it's never been brought up about anybody else. And I find that fascinating because that goes back to my idea that he's covered the way he is strictly because he's different, not because of his issues, which he certainly has.
Well, speaking of a guy who's got something to gain from some improvement, there's a guy out there who just won the Open, who's statistically speaking, thanks Twitter for reminding me 1,000 times so far, statistically, his long irons are as accurate as many professionals' wedges. This is Colin Morikawa at this point. At what point does he refine what maybe ails him, which I would argue would be likely his short game, and continues on a pretty remarkable path early on in his career?
That's the million-dollar question. True story, Colin Morikawa is a big Theragun user.
Yes, he is.
And his thoughts on that device are fascinating. I'm not going to go through them right now, but if you haven't followed his journey with the Theragun, it's definitely worth it. It's a cool idea to use for warmups and stuff like that. So just sidebar, that's a really good question. I've made the case that I think he could be the first of the new breed or the next guy to win the career slam, but his putting is so hot and cold that it's got to get slightly better. Statistically, that may or may not bear out, but when you watch him play, he's one of those guys, he'll just sit middle of the pack and need that hot putting round to get it going. I would make the case that John Rahm probably has a bit better chance because his tee game is incredibly strong and his putting is lights out when it's on.
So next guy in golf to hit the career grand slam, you're feeling Rahm?
I think it's probably going to be John Rahm, just because I think Colin is the one who he could struggle winning Augusta, and I don't think John Rahm will get that struggle.
We have a poll up on THP on the website, the forum, talking about this a little bit. Seems like Spieth got a lot of nods,
and he very well could. He's obviously got a little bit of a head start.
Yeah, I'd say.
And his game appears to be back, at least for 3 out of the 4 days so far. But this year it looked really good in a couple of tournaments. I don't know. He could be there too.
So you're feeling ROM. I love the idea of a guy like Morikawa kind of leading that younger generation. But I still want to see, I don't know what it is about him. I love it when DJ wins. I am so entertained by how annoyed people get with his answers. I am so entertained by it. I mean, take, for example, his latest thing with the Brooks v. Bryson feud. They go, who you like? He goes, I'm in the middle. I really don't care. And it's so on brand for DJ. He's just kind of out there doing his thing.
I'll be honest. I'm surprised DJ even knows there is a feud going on.
Well, he probably didn't. But I know you hate it. Yeah, in your own version of the way.
It's not the same. I think DJ, my biggest problem with Dustin Johnson as a dominant force is he's top five most boring interviews in the history of sports. And in the media, I'm looking for the story, and DJ doesn't offer it. I also don't think he has the game to get the career slam.
Who is, would you be willing to say who your favorite and least favorite interview in golf is right now of relevant players?
Of relevant players, well, Phil is the best interview in sports. Currently, in all of sports, Phil is the best interview. Least favorite interview is Dustin Johnson.
Second least.
I'm not a big Jordan Spieth interview person, only because it's a little vanilla for me. He's been too on brand for a while. There's a lot of them. Justin Thomas is a guy who just. He seems like, you know who he is? Justin Thomas is Don King. He's the promoter of shit, is the best way to put it. And yet went radio silent when it's his own shit.
Okay.
I don't know. I struggle with his stuff. Jumping into the middle of any turmoil on social media after he just went through it,
yeah,
was a complete turnoff to me.
I thought his comment regarding Bryson was pretty entertaining, but you know, I think a lot of pros were pretty bothered by that.
They should be.
It was interesting to see guys like Duffner come out and respond. Luke Donald came out and responded.
Yeah.
Some uncommon guys to come out.
And I liked it. I just struggled with Justin Thomas's specifically because he literally just went through brand turmoil.
Yeah.
And then went radio silent as if he was expecting something different from somebody else.
Right. Okay. Well, hey, I've taken up a majority of this episode talking about things I wanted to talk about. You have some big stories for me or big experiences you want to share. Sorry, that's the end of the show. Got to go by.
I just wanted to ask you.
Yeah.
And we've asked this on the THP forum and I've asked it on social media. I mean, you're getting pretty old. When retirement, that's true. When retirement is there, do you plan to retire to a golf community?
With or without my current wife?
With.
Okay.
You'd be lost without her, let's be honest.
It is true. So, yeah, I mean, what else do you do?
Nobody retires to Ohio. I don't think I've ever heard that before. So obviously you will move somewhere.
Well, ideally, I'd like to move now, but that doesn't appear to be in the cards. But
she's not listening. Don't worry.
My perspective is if you don't have something good going on in an active community once you're retired, what are you doing? Like, do you just sit there and do crosswords all day? I don't understand. Like, gardening? What's the play?
Yeah. Well, I mean, what's the play now? You work and you have your activities around. People could do that. But I've been genuinely curious about that. So my wife and I went to the Villages for a week. Not for us. It wasn't for that. It was actually a work thing. But the Villages is, I believe, the world's largest 55 and older community. And the stories that exist for multiple reasons on the Villages are probably true. But it was a pretty fascinating trip because the current mode of transportation there, while there are roads with cars and everything else, the current mode of transportation for most is a golf cart. And I was pretty fascinated by that because they have both roads and they have golf cart paths that have tunnels that go under the roads and bridges that go over major highways. And people use these golf carts as their mode of transportation. In fact, most people that we talked to had one car between their couple and two golf carts. Also, most golf carts there are gas. And
what?
to the tune of about 75% are gas-powered carts there.
All right, hard stop on that. I have two follow-up questions. Number one, yep. Are there a lot of swing sets at the villages?
No. I know where you're going, but no, I'm not going down that path.
Number two, do you think that gas carts there is more of a generational thing? Do you think
no.
Are the next, really?
No, it's about a journey. The villages, unlike what most people envision, it's 30 square miles roughly and 150,000 residents.
Wow.
So it's large. And an electric, if you wanted to go from, there's four town squares, well, three and then one being built. If you wanted to go from one to the other, that could be 28 miles. An electric cart at best goes 50 miles. You might not make it back. So they also have gas filling stations that are literally just for golf carts where you pull in and do it. A gas cart has a range of 250 miles, and an electric cart, in some cases, gets 20 miles. So
on a new battery that. Too.
Yeah. And then you also have the yearly expense where a gas cart is, you literally get an oil change just like a car. An electric cart, every few years, you're going to need new batteries to the tune of about $1,000. So, and more if you go lithium, where they're $2,000 to $5,000, depending on what you buy. So I think that there's something there. Now, compound that with the idea that Yamaha, being the number one producer of gas carts, and part of what they call the big three with easygoing club car, has what is called Quiet Tech, in this case, Quiet Tech 2, where they have a large number of stifling sound barriers to make them. And they're not much louder than an electric cart at this point. It was pretty impressive from that aspect. But the gas cart world is alive and well, and it is not what people remember as a kid growing up playing golf, where in the middle of your backswing, you'd hear a backfire and things like that. Personally, I wouldn't have a gas cart for my own use, only because I don't have a small little golf cart gas station to pull into and fill up, and I don't want a bunch of gasoline in my garage. But it is definitely different than what most people remember.
Yeah, I think of gas carts, and typically that means lower end golf courses on the quality spectrum that usually have older style gas carts that you have that like long wind up and slow get up and just awful.
That is not the case with the modern ones.
That's really interesting. I've always had that perspective because you don't have those like newer age ones. And especially from a fleet perspective on a golf course, it makes way more sense to have the electric, especially if you have enough for the full course.
Absolutely. And it also, keep in mind that maintenance on an electric cart for a fleet is very simple because most clubs lease their carts. They don't purchase them. Mm-hmm. So 3 years when that battery is about to go, they don't have to replace the batteries in them. They literally just, their lease runs out and they sign a new lease in a lot of ways, like people who lease automobiles. So from that aspect, but yeah, here's an interesting idea. The Villages owns four golf cart stores called the Villages Golf Cars, and they are the largest Yamaha cart dealer in the world by a landslide, and they're probably the largest EZ-GO dealer in the world too. There's
really?
Also 10 other golf cart stores within 5 miles of the place selling all the other brands.
It sounds to me like the Villages has a legitimate heartbeat in the golf industry in every sort of way.
I would make the case that it's in certain categories, they would dictate 2 to 5% of the golf industry market share. There's 70,000 golfers there. And again, I'm not saying this is a pro Villages advertisement. That's not my thing. They have plenty of issues. I'm saying it from a golf standpoint. It's the place to retire with free golf for life. And which is also kind of a salesy thing, but there's a lot of golf equipment being purchased there.
Okay. So I've met you before and we've had numerous conversations about the kind of people we are.
Yeah.
So knowing you and knowing your experiences, let me guess. But the 3-car garage is filled up a little bit more now.
Yes.
So you go to the Villages.
Technically not yet.
So you go to the Villages, you see how amazing it is to travel in a golf cart. You come home, you buy a golf cart.
No. The second part, yes.
Shades of gray.
we purchased a golf cart. I had been looking for a golf cart long before this trip. The trip was, again, it was something business related that I can't share right now. But that just confirmed it for my wife and everything else. That it was fun having the dog on there and everything and cruising around the neighborhood, going to dinner on the golf cart and everything was fun. To relate this back to your story about your club and not allowing push carts, my golf course that's next door, like if I go through our neighborhood and cut through somebody's yard, which I obviously wouldn't do that, but if I did that and brought my own golf cart to my golf course, I wouldn't be allowed to use my golf cart, even if I'm paying the trail fee.
What is the reason there?
The club court rule is that it's really threefold, I guess you would say. First, all carts have to look the same. Second, they have the pace of play monitor built into their carts so they can track where carts are and they're not allowed to go in certain areas. So the system is built in. And third, I think it's just we want to keep everything uniform kind of thing. Now they're still under some pandemic rules where I think they would allow it if I was on the trail fee membership and things like that. But yeah, in general, they want to be able to keep track of all the carts on the course so they don't allow it.
So tell me about the new cart then.
We looked at all of them. We had it narrowed down to a Club Car Onward and an Icon I-40. Icon is a newer brand owned by a company down in Tampa, Florida. And I was impressed with the features of that. Plus, it goes really fast right out of the box. So we went with the Icon, a little less money. What was fascinating to me is the idea that all golf carts are the same. And I went electric, by the way, not gas, obviously. But when you sit in all of them side by side, which we were able to do down in Florida, they are very different. Like even the size inside, the EasyGo carts, for instance, are much smaller internally than the Club Car and Yamaha were. And then other brands like Star and Tomberlin and all these other ones, there's a lot of brands now and they all have different features.
So I also know as much as you like to engage with people, you're not exactly like a people person inside your bubble kind of guy. Does this cart have more than two seats in it and are people invited on them?
It has two regular golf seats, and in the back, you either have your clubs or it has two seats that are rear facing.
Okay.
Are people allowed on it? Yeah. I mean, I share a cart with people when I ride. I'm not going to handshake them. I'll give them a fist bump,
though. Did you pay the extra for the plexiglass between the two?
No, we're going to put up a sheet.
Okay. Well, that's cool, man. That's exciting. And you're in a great spot down there in Nashville where you can enjoy this for most months of the year, I'd imagine.
Yeah, we play golf all year long here. We'll find out of how cold I'm willing to play because it dips into the 40s and stuff here. But
are you able to take the golf cart to get a breakfast burrito?
Yeah, I could do that. Dan's referring to a local barbecue place that's like a quarter of a mile from my house, and he enjoys them. So yes, I could do that.
Oh man, that's awesome. That's exciting. I'd love to get one. My golf course is 5 minutes away in car, and it probably wouldn't be that much more time in a golf cart.
That's the way ours is. Ours is about 3.5 to 4 minutes in car.
Yeah.
And it's about 5 minutes in golf cart.
Right. But it's all back road. So it's not like the speed would change.
Yeah.
Man, like if I had a third car garage, if I had a third stall in my garage, I'd have a pretty hard time not doing it because it's fun. We see people in the neighborhood driving around, having a good time in theirs. And I mean, yeah, some of them
I can fix that solution. Move your wife's car outside.
Yeah. Fair. Yeah. My car's outside right now because of mulch, but that is not something
you have mulch in your garage.
No, it's in front of the garage door.
Oh, that would be awkward.
Yeah. It's disappointing. So the other thing I was going to try and talk to you about or remember about was, remember Hague Point? We went down there and played some incredible golf.
You say it very Canadian-ish. It's Hague Point.
Hague Point on Dufusky Island.
Hague first tee. Point.
Whatever. Whatever, man. Do you remember the golf carts there?
Yes.
Those things were like lightning bolts.
So I learned about the speed of golf carts, which is really fascinating. There's a lot that goes into what speed your golf cart goes and how fast they're legally allowed to go without needing a license plate and a registration and all that. And it's pretty interesting. Most golf carts at most courses go between 12 and 15 miles per hour. Once in a while, you'll see somebody with a really fast cart, or in this case, the one at Hague Point. They went 19.9 miles per hour, generally speaking, 20 miles per hour. They felt like lightning. Yesterday, we test drove one that went 26. And it almost feels dangerous, like it's going fast. And with some modifications, you can actually get it to 30 relatively easily. And when you're just on that little tiny platform cruising down a road going 30 with no doors or anything, it feels a little weird. But yeah, it's really interesting how some golf carts, and to be fair, with electric versus gas, going back to that, electric carts are much easier to modify for speed than the gas carts are.
Yeah, I expect by the time I come back down there, your cart will look like the Batmobile. I've been Twitter searching the images. I think it's a great look for you.
Yeah, I think the Batmobile probably not, but it will definitely have some custom things going on. It's got a backup camera. It's got windshield wipers. It's got all kinds of stuff.
A backup camera and a golf cart.
Yeah, came standard. Okay. You got to have it. I mean, you don't want to have to turn around, do you?
Especially not if there's people in the cart with you.
Definitely true.
All right, my friend, that's another fun episode down. We had some good chats today. Do you have anything you want to talk
about? If anybody is still left listening to this, it'll be rather interesting.
Yeah.
Yes, I have a couple of questions.
Okay.
You are about to take place in a THP event we have next week with Mizuno.
Yes, sir.
And you have been you've been talking about going through some lessons and some fighting some swing issues and things like that. How is it coming?
Yeah, better than I thought it would, honestly. It was nice getting sort of a baseline. I'm lucky that I have a lot of my swings documented from years past when things weren't bad, thanks to THP TV. And really, it's a little bit of hand path and a lot of wrist. And two people who gave me terrible advice at one point or another put me into a place where I couldn't make the move I wanted to back into that sort of autocorrect, you know, what I'm talking about a little bit, but yeah, it's just repetition. I back out on the golf course every couple of days trying to solve it on the range. And yeah, I'm not worried about it. It's way better than I thought it would be. Let's just say that.
Do you have a prediction on whether your team will win or Chris Fauchal's team will win? It's not really your team. It's Jeff Crawford's team, but your team versus Chris Fauchal's team.
That's a good question. I like my guys. I think they got a good chance of putting on a show. I think every time Vosh pushes out this nonsense about him by a million makes me feel better because number one, I've already beaten him. So I've got nothing to lose here. And number two, I'm never going to lose by a million strokes. So I always feel like I'm winning, you know?
That's a very odd prediction. secondly, you are going to come up on some pretty big milestones with this podcast coming up. You got 75 shows coming up. Pretty soon it's going to be 100.
Yeah.
What's the celebration outline? What are you thinking?
Oh, man. We should do a giveaway.
Okay.
We should give away your clubs. I mean.
Why my clubs? Why not your clubs?
I
like my clubs.
Yeah, I don't know. What are you thinking? What'd you have in mind?
I was literally asking. This maybe, is not something we've talked about before, people. I'm
maybe we could do, let's do like something live. We should try and do something live.
Aren't these all recorded live?
Well, I mean, like a live stream.
Oh, yeah, we could do that.
And we might have some guys around locally in a month or two. And that'll be getting relatively close to one of the milestones.
Yeah,
we'll have to get it figured out. There's some good. I think
you should also do an Ask Canadan Anything show.
Oh boy,
live,
a live Ask Canadan Anything.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, if people have interest in that, I love asking my guests to ask me random questions on the spot. I feel like it couldn't go wrong. I don't think there's any way anyone would ask a question that would be either complex or confounding. I think, yeah, I think I think it's going to be great. And maybe by then my voice will be back. So
maybe. So for those following along, next week you'll have a much better guest than this, I'm sure. To not talk about the villages and golf carts and other nonsense.
Well, you know, it was fun. I enjoyed our open chat. I think that Bryson painted a pretty interesting picture of himself once again. But I think the bigger story of the week was definitely Morikawa, maybe a little bit about a guy who simply didn't close when he should have, but also kind of hidden under the radar with Spieth putting on another show, maybe giving us a feel that this kid, if he can get out of his own head, is very much capable of winning any golf tournament he enters. So that's cool. Josh, thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate
it. Anytime.
Everyone out there, if you're playing golf this weekend, have an awesome time. Let me know how you play, and I'll see you next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.